Welcome back. Our next case, United States v. Lease. Lieutenant Colonel Coward, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the appellant?
I am, Your Honor. Thank you.
And Major Lim, are you prepared to argue on behalf of the government? Very well, then. We'll make that change. Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, members of the court.
Counsel, I'm sorry. You're going to have to speak in yet. Okay.
I can talk loud.
Thank you.
Members of the court, and may it please the court, and with your permission, we request 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Today, we ask the court apply sentence credit pursuant to United States versus Pierce to the total adjudged sentence at all court-martial proceedings. We request this because in the era of segmented sentences, the sentence credit applied by the military judge failed to provide the appellant with meaningful relief. The underlying notion behind all varieties of sentence credit, many of which are unique to the military, is to make an accused whole for action that the government has taken against an accused, whether that is prior confinement, unlawful pretrial confinement, restriction tantamount to confinement, or punishment under Article 15 for offense that is later prosecuted at court-martial. Military judges are required to award sentence credit for the purposes, essentially, of making an accused whole. And whether an accused is properly made whole as a result of sentence credit has been evaluated against the standard of whether that relief is meaningful. By applying Pierce to the total adjudged sentence, this court can ensure that the appellant and future accused receive meaningful relief, while also ensuring that the application of that credit is easily applied, simplistically applied, and consistently applied across the military's trial courts.
Now, Colonel Coward, you just used the word meaningful twice there in your brief. You used meaningful a number of times. How should our recent decision in Valentin and Dino affect our analysis here?
Your Honor, in the recent decision, obviously the court looked at Article 66D2 and that language, the textual language, of course, that says may provide appropriate relief. And there the argument was by counsel that, well, appropriate is equivalent to meaningful. Here, we're working from a different statute, of course. We're working from Section Article 15F of the UCMJ. That does not require appropriate or meaningful relief. Where that meaningful relief comes from is the series of cases that not only have looked at Pierce credit, but also all different types of sentence credit with the goal of making the accused whole. And that's been judged through those cases by whether or not that relief is meaningful.
So you're saying it's really based on the language of the statute rather than on the purpose. Because in Larner, Suzuki, Spastout, you're all talking about illegal pretrial confinement, which is different from this. You're saying that the motivating force behind those various cases remains the same.
That's correct, Your Honor. The motivating force and the thread throughout those cases that look at whether the credit is appropriate is meaningful. Now, Pierce used the specific language to ensure complete credit when they designed their opinion. But the idea is no different, and this Court has said that that Pierce credit is essentially akin to credit for example, Allen credit.
But in terms of getting complete credit, aren't they getting complete credit when it's assigned to that specific segment of the sentence? And, of course, in Pierce we're talking about for the same offense. You seem to be arguing in your brief and here that it should be sprinkled over different offenses as well. What's the justification for taking that approach?
Your Honor, the justification is that to an accused, or to the appellant in this case, who has served punishment pursuant to Article 15, both in extra duty and restriction, if that credit is applied in a illusory fashion, which is what our take of what happened here is, his sentence is not reduced at all. To that appellant, he has no idea that he even received the reduction because the sentence is the same. So for that reason...
But that wouldn't have been true if he'd been found not guilty of the Article 120 offense.
That's correct, Your Honor. And
what about if on appeal that was overturned?
If the 120 or the 128 offense is overturned, then in that case the remaining offenses would be the Article 15 offenses that he was court-martialed for, and he would have had some actual reduction in the sentence. But that's not what happened. And I think that what we see is that to the appellant, there's no difference. I mean, he is serving this, whatever is the controlling sentence, in this case, the 128 offense, if that's longer, this appellant and any future accused will have their sentence subsumed. And the nature of Article 15s is that they are designed for minor punishment, minor misconduct. Court-martials are not. And so for whatever reason, when the government adds Article 15, something that's been priorly adjudicated under Article 15 to a court-martial, it's more likely than not that at the vast majority of court-martials that Article 15 sentence is going to be subsumed by some other offense. The result of that, of course, is that an accused will never really see the credit that they are deserved, they are owed.
Counsel, what I was wondering is, you spend a lot of time talking about what the accused sees or what he or she feels, but I mean, why is that the focus? I mean, isn't the only focus is whether or not the CCA has abided by its mandate to approve an appropriate sentence? And once they've done that, that's the end. They don't consider about anything about what the accused felt. My guess is that most criminal accused have a different view of their sentences than the rest of us.
Your Honor, you're correct. I'm guessing that most accused have no love for their sentence. But the goal, of course, with any sentence credit, whether that's Pierce credit, Allen credit, any of the others that we deal with, is to compensate the accused for something, some action that the government has taken. In this case...
Right, but your view seems to be that even if that happened here, it's not enough. They didn't compensate him enough. Is that fair to say?
I think it is.
And on that front, whether it's enough or not is really determined by what the CCA determines is an appropriate sentence for the court-martial. Isn't that right? It might be right, but I mean, let me ask you this. Do you agree with me or not? Because you might not, it might be right, but you might not agree with me.
I think it's a different question, Your Honor. I think the question of whether or not the sentence was appropriate is different than whether or not the appellant received the right credit. And as I lay out in our brief, there are different decisions, right? The first decision that a military judge must make is, what should I sentence this accused for? The second, and that's what you're talking about, Your Honor, is that initial decision, is that appropriate? And that's, of course, what the service courts look at. But what we're talking about here is, then there's a second prong. Should that run concurrent versus consecutive? And then to that sentence, what credit should we apply? And that's the question, I think, that's before this court, which is, I think is just a little bit different than the sentence appropriateness that Your Honor is asking about.
And isn't all of that kind of the prior thinking upset a bit by the fact that we've changed the sentencing duties, or at least the sentencing scheme, for courts martial?
It is most definitely a change, Your Honor. And under the Pierce framework, this has been something that has been working successfully for nearly 50 years. And so, sure, we've had a slight tweak in how judges announce their sentence. But I would also argue that there's not that much change, that counsel and courts martial have been arguing for as long as I've been practicing, judge, for this offense, you should have sentenced the accused to this. And then for this offense, this number, and this offense, this number. That's been wrapped up into one unitary sentence that the military judges have been announcing. I would argue, though, that under the offenses in this case, where the punishments haven't changed, that it's likely that the military judge would have issued the same exact sentence, except now we know how it's been parsed out. That's not a reason to change how Pierce is applied to that sentence.
Counsel, I see your point. I mean, maybe the accused got no relief here. But look at it from the position of the government, which is that the law allows the government to bring an offense to court-martial even if they've already received punishment under Article 15. But in this case, the government, if we were to adopt your view, by trying him again in a court-martial, the government not only didn't get any more punishment, it would have reduced the punishment than if they had never even brought the offense again. I mean, that seems to go against this notion that you can be tried, you can have Article 15 punishment and then be tried. I mean, from the government's position, they would have done better not to bring this at all. And that doesn't seem like Pierce credit. That seems like something weird.
Your Honor, I don't think that the segmented sentencing, though, has changed that. The government's sentences have been being reduced since Pierce came around. Now, look, I think you're probably right. If the government had just charged the 128 offense, then, you know, we wouldn't be here. But it's also the government that makes the table. You know, they for whatever reason, thought that there would be some advantage to adding these Article 15 offenses to the charge sheet. Yet, when they see how the application of the credit would be applied, they complain. But that's a strategic choice that they make, and they control that. And I would argue that the government in their briefs claims that to be a windfall. It's certainly a windfall that the government, I don't agree that it's a windfall, but it is a sentence that the government created the circumstances to occur.
Counsel, can you just address very specifically the key line of the Army Court of Criminal Appeals decision, which is what the trial judge did here is the only way to ensure that the Pierce credit gets applied to the offense for which he'd already received Article 15 punishment and doesn't get applied to anything else. That's sort of the whole essence of the ACCA's decision, which is it's the only way to do it.
Your Honor, I believe the quote was, we don't want to have him get credit where no credit is due. But the problem with that is that the appellant in this case is not really getting any credit because he's seeing no shortening, no reduction in the actual length of the sentence served. The other point I think
isn't that more the operation of concurrent versus consecutive? I mean, if the military judge had announced a sentence that was consecutive, then he would have gotten credit.
That's correct, Your Honor. That is correct. The other thing I'd point this court to, however, is that let's look at how other types of sentence credit are adjudicated. Because for every other type of sentence credit, that credit is not applied to a segmented portion of the sentence.
But counsel, that was going to be my follow-up question, because you want us to look at how all the credits are applied, but only in the Article 15 context do we have, and the Chief Judge raised this, the statutory language about any act or omission. And so it is clear that government can only charge for a previous Article 15 when it's the same act or omission. And that when Pierce talks about the credit, Pierce says, for the same act or omission. And so there is a distinction between Pierce credit and the other types of credits. Why is not the statutory language controlling? I think that that's what Chief Judge asked originally.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that the statutory language, comes from Article 15F. Mm-hmm. And what that says is that when an accused essentially wants to, that the court-martial shall consider the fact that there was a prior Article 15 punishment. Now, that language, of course, has not changed. It hasn't changed since Pierce was originally announced. The Gammons case, of course, talks about how the various ways that could happen. One is to argue simply that from a mitigation standpoint, the sentence should be reduced. But of course, there are other ways, which is the actual application of credit. And our position is that if we don't apply the credit to the total adjudged sentence in the same way that we do with Allen credit and Mason credit, that which is possible, and it works under those frameworks. If we don't do that in the same way, we're not actually giving the appellant in this case actual relief. Seeing no further questions.
May I ask one other question?
Yes,
can the military judge take into account the possibility of Pierce credit when deciding whether to sentence the accused consecutively or concurrently?
Is your question, can the military judge?
Would that be an abuse of discretion? I mean, suppose the military judge said, well, I was going to do it concurrently, but I really didn't want to deprive the accused of his Pierce credit, so I'm going to sentence him consecutively, and so he's going to get some extra days here.
And, Your Honor, I see my time is up.
Please proceed.
With permission. Thanks. I think a military judge, my view of it is that would be putting the cart before the horse. The military judge should determine first the sentence, next whether that's concurrent or not, and then apply the credit. To start, this is not artfully said, but to start messing with the sentence to account for credit is a good way to nullify credit.
Good way to do what?
To nullify the credit, or just to whitewash it so that it's not really being applied. And that's why the court has said at times, we really want military judges to apply the credit afterwards. Is why the court has said, prior to the regime change, convening authorities can do it, and it's best for convening authorities to do it when they're approving the sentence. Of course, we're in a little bit of a different era now where it's maybe better for a military judge to do that to the total adjudged sentence.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Colonel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Captain?
Good morning, Chief Judge Olson, members of the court, may it please the court. I'm Captain Nicholas Schaefer, and along with my co-counsel, Major Justin Talley, we represent the United States in this matter. Confinement credit under United States v. Pierce exists for the sole purpose of ensuring that a service member is not twice punished for the same offense at both non-judicial punishment and by trial by court-martial. This court should affirm the Army's ruling in this case, the Army Court's ruling in this case, because Pierce credit is offense-specific. Congress established segmented sentencing within our system, and because applying Pierce credit to segmented offenses is both appropriate and logically consistent. Now, different types of confinement credit have different purposes, and Article 15 is a very different situation that we have here. Part 5 of the Manual for Courts Martial, specifically subparagraph E, states that punishment at nonjudicial punishment is not a bar to trial by court martial for the same offense, the same act or omission. In fact, nonjudicial punishment has been found not to be a criminal conviction. It does not have double jeopardy attached, and it is an administrative tool for commanders to ensure discipline generally in the force, as well as rehabilitation for soldiers without the stigma of a criminal conviction. United States v. Pierce and United States v. Gammons both upheld these principles found in Part 5 of the MCM and Article 15 of the UCMJ.
Well, that's all good in theory, but if you're an accused, you've got the same sovereign who is punishing you twice for the same conduct. And yet, at the end of the day, you are not getting any type of relief for that prior punishment. So when we're dealing with Pierce, we're not dealing with based on statute. We're trying to figure out back then and now what's the proper way to do it. So rather than getting tied down to Pierce, if we're applying a principle in terms of what is the right thing to do there when a sovereign is punishing you twice, why isn't it appropriate to say at the end of the day you should get some quote-unquote meaningful relief when you've already been punished under Article 15?
Yes, Your Honor, because not just that the nature of an Article 15 is different and that this is applied in a different way than other types of confinement credit, but also United States v. Pierce specifically sets out that the wrong, not really even the wrong because it is legal punishment, but the situation to be dealt with is to ensure that the service member is not twice punished for the same offense. It is offense specific. And the way that that is applied is confinement credit day for day. It has to be complete credit. But nowhere does it say that the appellant, the accused, the service member has to be perfectly satisfied, that this has to end up in a windfall. The perfect illustration of this being offense-specific is if we have two offenses in a hypothetical case, offense one, which was related to a previous nonjudicial punishment, and offense two, which is completely unrelated. If this service member goes to a contested trial and is acquitted on offense one and convicted of offense two, despite having faced a prior punishment, even if that Pierce credit was calculated at a 39A session, that Pierce credit is no longer applicable because the purpose, the express purpose of Pierce credit is to ensure that the service member is not twice punished for the same offense, and that same offense is no longer being punished. What appellant is asking for is an extension, an expansion of Pierce credit. They are asking for, in this case, one of two things to happen, either for Pierce credit to apply concurrently, so instead of the 28 days of credit, which appellant was actually due, to receive 84 days just spread across every single sentence of confinement, or that it should simply be applied completely untethered from the intent and the purpose of Pierce, not to a specific offense that was previously punished, but to whatever the largest offense is. This is an inconsistent way of applying Pierce. It is a windfall, and it is an absurd result.
Counsel, on that point, can you respond to appellant's argument that, listen, the government sets the table. You didn't have to give him Article 15 first, and once you've given him Article 15, you don't have to charge him with it at court-martial. But if you do charge him with a court-martial and he is found guilty, we're going to take Pierce credit off the whole thing. I mean, it's sort of hard to see how the government is really harmed by the remedy that appellant is asking for here, which is that if you don't want Pierce credit to apply, don't bring the charge to court-martial. I mean, everybody knows what's on the table, and this is the way the government decided to proceed.
Yes, Your Honor, and that is true. The government does control the charge sheet. However, it should be noted that, particularly in this case where it is a guilty plea, where the two sides agree on what will be pled to. Appellant specifically agreed, JA 17, these are the offenses I will plead guilty to, including the offenses for which he was previously punished. And then agreeing that they will run concurrently. Now, Congress enacted this segmented sentencing as a meaningful system. Every sentence is assigned specific confinement, and that is to ensure multiple different things: efficiency at the appellate level, transparency of sentence, and also, as you see on members of the court on JA 62, the Military Justice Review Group's recommendations, that it ensures that a service member receiving segmented sentencing is not being twice punished for the same offense. That's not to say that concurrent sentencing resolves any issue of Pierce credit, but it does apply to the same issue. And this is the system in which we operate now. When you have segmented offenses, all that is required is that appellant receives, as appellant has stated, is made whole for the offenses to which Pierce credit applies. And it may not always be to his ultimate or complete satisfaction, but it should be applied consistently. And as the Army Court found in its ruling and as adheres to common sense, the way the military judge applied Pierce credit to segmented offenses will always be consistent regardless of concurrent or consecutive sentences. It will only apply to the sentence to which it was intended to. So that credit is not given where credit is not due, but appellant is made whole. Appellant is given something that is appropriate relief. And as this court stated just over a week ago in United States versus Valentin Andino, meaningful relief consisting of a tangible benefit may not be suitable for a particular situation, particularly when it results in a windfall.
Counsel, can you also respond to the appellant's argument that the new system isn't really that much different from the old system? Accused is convicted of multiple offenses. They make arguments about sentencing. You know, there's no formal way of assigning a specific punishment to a specific offense or deciding whether things are going to run concurrently or consecutively, but that was always done informally, and then Pierce credit applied to the whole thing, such that if this case had arisen prior to segmented sentencing, prior to concurrent versus consecutive sentencing, it might have come out the exact same way. We might have had the one sentence, and then the Pierce credit applied to all of it.
That is possible, Your Honor, that it would apply in the exact same way in the old system. The difference would be that it was unitary sentencing and there was no way to know. The only way to apply it and ensure that they got complete credit was to apply it to that single sentence. But now, as has been found in other cases, I believe U.S. v. Flores, sentence appropriateness looks at each segment of the sentence, not just the sentence as a whole. We cannot ignore Congress's intent, and we cannot ignore the system in which we exist today. And the most just way and the most consistent way to apply Pierce credit is to apply it only as U.S. v. Pierce has dictated, despite it existing prior to segmented sentencing, that it be complete credit day for day, no more, no less, so that a service member shall not be punished twice for the same offense. There are many different situations where the word meaningful has been put forward in court today and within the briefs. But beyond the fact that meaningful relief consisting of a tangible benefit may not be appropriate in every situation, in this case, it was meaningful. It was meaningful for the offenses to which it applied. And that does not always mean that in every situation within our military justice system that there will be that tangible benefit, that there will always be that complete satisfaction with the result. For example,
So what if this court were to hold that it's up to the military judge to decide how to apply the credit?
The military judge, Your Honor, does have significant discretion in a lot of sentencing matters. It should just be done in a way that is consistent with U.S. v. Pierce and the intent and purpose of Pierce credit.
But now the landscape has changed since Pierce. So now we're trying to figure out the correct way forward in terms of segmented sentencing. So that's why I asked. Let's set Pierce aside. What would be wrong with this court saying the military judge decides? Just as the military judge decides the correct sentence, the military judge decides how best to apply the Pierce credit, for lack of a better term.
Your Honor, that is one of the options that this court has, and there is nothing definitively problematic with it. However, the best result is the one that is consistent with what Pierce credit was intended to combat, because of the nature of an Article 15. And because Article 15 itself, Pierce and Gammons, define this as offense-specific. Anything more, while it could be held that the judge has discretion, anything more would be a windfall. It would be a windfall to appellant. The perfect situation to illustrate this, again, a hypothetical with two charges, the first being the nonjudicial punishment offense and the second being unrelated. If pursuant to his pleas, he is convicted of both, he receives a 30-day sentence of confinement for both to run concurrently, and the judge determines 30 days of Pierce credit would apply. In that situation, if the military judge had discretion or if appellant's scheme is adopted, then that person, that service member who committed two different offenses, who was convicted of two different offenses and received sentences for two different offenses, would serve 0 days of confinement. While someone who was convicted only of the second offense on the exact same facts and circumstances and received the exact same sentence would serve 30 days.
But, counsel, isn't appellant's response to that is the government set the table. You mix together this Article 15 offense with the non-Article 15 offense, and you get what you get.
Understood, Your Honor, that the government does decide what goes on the charge sheet. However, there are many lawful reasons why they could be doing this. It could be to ensure collateral consequences are attached. It could be just to ensure that the full breadth or scope of criminality or misconduct is reflected. It could be to ensure that there is an appropriate sentence, because the punishments at an Article 15 are decidedly minor, treated in a different way than actually sitting in pretrial confinement, legal or illegal, or some sort of Article 13 punishment that is done personally to someone. And so while the government does decide the charges, that does not change the fact that Pierce credit should and is offense-specific. And to expand it beyond that would be to create a windfall, potentially, even if the government has been the one to, you know, decide what is on the charge sheet. It is still what is on the charge sheet for a reason, and it is still important to properly reflect and respect Congress's enactment of segmented sentencing to ensure that each sentence to confinement is treated as a separate punishment. Because Pierce credit is offense-specific, because Congress has enacted this segmented sentencing, and because it is meaningful for the offenses to which it applies, and it is appropriate in this situation based on Article 15 itself and based on the case law, we ask this Court to affirm the Army Court of Criminal Appeals ruling in this case, pending any questions.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Captain Schaefer. Colonel Coward.
Thank you, Your Honor. The court asked earlier, why not file the statutory language? And the court asked, can the military judge
apply the credit. And I think that the military judge absolutely should be the individual applying the credit. With the change in the sentencing scheme, the military judge is the individual who is most capable of applying the credit, who can effectuate it the most. In doing that, the government says, well, it's a windfall to apply the confinement credit to these prior offenses, outside of the prior offenses, to, for example, in this case, the 128 offense. But what the government misses here is that Pierce credit, if it is a rank reduction, Pierce credit, if it's a forfeiture, that would be applied to the total adjudged sentence. Say, for example, in this case, the accused was sentenced to a rank reduction, sentenced to forfeiture for one of the Article 15 offenses, and on the 128 offense was not sentenced to any rank reduction or forfeiture because of the way the court-martial sentence is announced. Well, that credit's getting applied to the 128 sentence, to the total adjudged sentence. But the government fails to make that distinction, fails to understand that we are already doing this with other types of punishment. The other reason that the government
But let me ask you this. I mean, it seems that there's a difference between confinement and the other kinds of punishments. I mean, you can't be reduced to E3 on one offense and get reduced to E2 on another offense and E1 on yet a third offense. Whereas with confinement, you obviously can have different amounts of confinement, gradations if you wish. So doesn't that undermine the statement you just made?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because I agree that the way that those sentences are announced is different because they're not.
Well, it's not that they're announced. I don't think you could. I'm not aware. I mean, maybe in some case long ago they did that, but I've been around a long time. I haven't seen it. So, and what I'm talking about is what I just said, you know, a different gradation of forfeitures, a different gradation of rank, you know, for each offense. I've never seen that. That seems like a difference.
If I see my time is up, if I can
please proceed
with permission. Your Honor, you're correct in your characterization of how the sentence is determined. However, if we adopted the government's position, who says that later on we're not looking at, for example, a different type of credit and trying to parse out confinement there too? Say, for example, we had an accused who's placed in jail for two offenses, pretrial confinement, and he's charged, he's going to be court-martialed for that, and all of a sudden there's a new offense. And so we add an offense to what he's being prosecuted for, and all of a sudden there's a court-martial, there's a sentence that's announced, and there's some length of confinement. Well, under that scenario, under that type of credit, the way that credit would be adjudicated is this confinement credit would be applied to the total adjudged sentence. Here, but by taking the government's argument, you could say, well, why are we doing that there? Why don't we start bifurcating or segmenting out other different types of credit if we can do that in a confinement context? I think that there's no reason to do that. To get a consistent, easily applied result, something that gives certainty to the lawyers, gives certainty to the judges, gives certainty throughout our system, the way that we can do that is to apply credit in Pierce like we do with every other case, every other type of credit, and apply it to the total adjudged sentence.
Please, Judge Arthur.
Counsel, this is sort of a follow-on to something Judge Maggs asked. But let's say we adopted your scheme and then the military judge in this case had there was 4 months, just decided, I know he's going to get 28 days of credit, so I'll just give him 4 months for the Article 120. Would that have been permissible? I mean, he didn't say that, but that's what he did. Like, well, dude, no one would know, right? Like, whatever rule we implement, the judges, given their discretion within the law and the maximum minimum sentences, they can still come out to whatever result that they want to get to, right?
The reality is that that's true, Your Honor. I think if we all had the benefit of going and reading through records and judges knowing that, for example, there's going to be a certain number of credit and all of a sudden the confinement equals the exact number of credit, judges can do that as long as it's not, an abuse of their discretion. So I agree with that, Your Honor.
So this is getting to your final point. What we really need is a clear rule.
Absolutely.
Any further questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Case is now submitted. Court thanks counsel for both sides, and the court will stand adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
All rise. The court is adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.